What's happening, people? Welcome to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Today is the 23rd of February, 2016, and my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we count down lists to do with movies and TV, so you don't have to make those difficult decisions about what to watch next.
As well as a bunch of other shit that we do.
Segments, including a new one today.
Yeah. What's it called, Paulie?
It's called Rewind Be Kind, and we'll tell you about that when we premiere it very shortly. But before then, we should revisit Deadpool. And we did hypothesize last week that it was doing pretty well. Did a lot better than just pretty well. It broke every box office record for an R-rated film known to humankind.
And what kind of good news is that for moviegoers?
Well, it's great for us,
as
we said, that who want to see more R-rated films of this kind of genre, if you will. But and then James Gunn comes out and says, studios will run with it the wrong way and they'll just literally throw stupid amounts of violence and stupid amounts of swearing in, which won't work with the characters or
who's
the story.
James Gunn?
He's the guy who directed Guardians of the Galaxy as
well as
a whole bunch of low budget.
That's really weird.
Mm.
So he's actually advocating more stifling of his.
I don't know. Maybe it's a case of, hey, I've made it big with a PG-13 film,
and now you're
making it big with R.
Yeah, you know, that is exactly what it is. That's what it is.
Anyway, we're recording this on the Sunday before release, which is February 21st. As of 2 days ago, Deadpool had already made $196 million in the States, and another $145 million, or $150 million, I should say, around the rest of the world, for a grand total of just shy of $350 million on a production budget of $58 million.
Oh, see, this is their success story. Now.
Is it? And this is February.
Yeah.
This is box office dead time.
Mm-hmm.
The summer period in the States is getting bigger and bigger. So now we have Batman and Superman coming versus Superman coming out in late March.
Uh-huh.
But a February release that's a success is a different barrel of fish.
So it changes the whole game, really.
Well, it could do, yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if Hollywood is like now looking to look at releases that they're about, like Suicide Squad or something, right? And think, R rated now works. You sure you want to pump a few scenes in here, give it an R rating? I don't know. It's probably too late now.
Maybe too late along in that process. But for future product material, yeah, but definitely.
Like, you know, R up Batman versus Superman, everyone. That would be the shit, right? Make Paul a little happier.
Probably
like
would
that.
Make me happier, but it wouldn't make the investors and the producers any happier, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, it's a business. Well, what are you going to do?
All right, so there we are. Time for the aforementioned new segment.
Let's go.
A be kind motherfucker.
You know, sometimes it feels like we just invent new segments so we can do new theme songs for it.
Pretty much.
Yeah
hard to argue with that. Anyway, Rewind Be Kind is a new rewatch segment that we are launching today, primarily because our old segment, Unbelievable, which regular listeners may recall, maybe fondly, wasn't working out because Wayne could rarely find a film that I hadn't seen that he wanted to recommend to me.
No shit. This cracker has seen every motherfucking movie ever. Even shit you've never heard of. So
we thought, well, let's revamp it a little bit. Let's pick a film we both have seen. And then the challenge is we go back and forth. Do we pick a film that's good, i.e. Be Kind?
Yep.
Or do we pick a shit film that we then both sit through and then rag on for your somewhat enjoyment?
Yeah. Which can also be funny and entertaining.
Yeah. So I went first off mic this week, and I chose Jaws, Steven Spielberg's 1975 seminal classic.
Mm-hmm. Born the same year we were.
Yeah. In fact, released 1 month to the day before I was born. It was a huge hit. It took squillions of dollars, and well, it might have, because, well, for mine, this is a great movie.
This is, I'll be honest with you, like, I've seen Jaws before, but I can't remember sitting down and watching it. I think I've just seen, like, one half of this or the other half, or so bits on TV.
You've
all the
never
time.
Sat through the whole
no,
Jaws?
No, I definitely sat through the whole thing, but, like, I was real young. I was one when it was born, or zero. And, so when I saw it, I had already heard all of everything about it, and I don't think I'd heard that Steven Spielberg had the actual shark animatronic thing or whatever had fucked up, and that's why you don't see the shark until sort of later on in the movie. I didn't know any of that stuff. So seeing it again, just like fully all the way through, was quite interesting.
Okay.
I was real impressed. And I remember just, I mean,
thank God.
No, I always knew it was good or considered good or whatever, but I wasn't quite sure how I felt about it.
Okay.
The first thing that I mentioned, kind of noticed now, is that Richard Dreyfuss is the best character in this thing.
Matt Hooper.
Yeah.
Hooper,
yeah, he's just likable and charming immediately.
Yeah.
And that helps so much. The thing I like about this movie is that because of a lot of things, and by no small means the score, it's really
iconic.
Easy to watch. the jaunty sort of music scores between scenes, and even in the middle of tense scenes. Who did this? John Williams?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. That's just great, because it makes me keep wanting to watch and allows me to be happy. And then I noticed that during the big shark attack scenes, there's no music. There's like none. There's no score, nothing. It's like, it's just nothing.
Is the iconic sort of dun,
dun, dun, dun. That happens at the beginning of it, but when all the action happens, there's no like scream of violins or anything. There's none of that shit. It's really interesting. That's what I just noticed anyway.
At the end of the film, there's definitely a score when Brody and
it starts again.
Off. Yeah. But look, if we go right back to the start of the movie, we get the iconic score. And is there any more influential composer than John Williams?
No, there isn't.
In modern cinema history.
And you know, it's funny, you look back on his old movies, you can tell how kind of innocent his music is back then. And
I mean, it's a product of its time. It's 1975.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's fantastic. So you get that score, you get the camera going, just moving through the ocean, and then you get the drunk teens on the beach.
Mm.
And this film, I reckon, shows you straight away that it's playing for keeps, because the guy and the girl get in the water, and the girl gets eaten.
Yes.
Well, sorry, the girl gets in the water, the guy falls unconscious right on the edge of the surf.
Absolutely.
And she gets eaten. And that's not what you would anticipate in a film from this time.
Actually, I didn't even think about that. You're right. What actually got me was that the kid got chomped afterwards.
Well, yeah, so the next shark scene is Alex Kittner dying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great moment in that film. Like, it literally is kind of a stand-up and, like, jaw-drop moment when the shark comes out, is at low angle over the water, a fair way away. It's quite a wide shot.
Yep.
And it just comes out and envelops the kid's raft, and the kid just disappears.
That's right. He didn't make the kid scream too much.
No,
just kind of
it wasn't as horrifying as the girl's death early on, but it couldn't be. This is a kid.
Exactly.
But
still, like, still
so now, the first two deaths in this movie are a girl and a kid.
Yes, which is surprising. I know you could get away with more back then, but I don't know. On some levels, yes. On some levels, no. I don't know.
It was less PC time. Maybe that's what you're
driving at. Yeah.
But nevertheless, I think it's very goes against type to have this kind of deaths early on. So we establish a threat. Meanwhile, we are getting the scenes of Police Chief Brody and his family and his interactions with the mayor. Roy Scheider, obviously, is Chief Brody, and he's great. You said Richard Dreyfuss is Matt Hooper, the oceanographer who comes in, or the shark expert who comes in, is the best in the film. I really like his character in this, because he's a family man.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's a nice bloke, and he's trying to sort of balance the politics of his role with being the approachable bloke on the street.
Yeah.
And he obviously cares about his two boys, and he hates water, which is the best bit of his character.
True, and I can identify.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
so you hate water and you're a police chief on an island, which is a running kind of gag through the movie
as well. That's a bad hat, Harry. Yeah.
That's it.
But this is why he's definitely the lead, don't get me wrong. So, you know, that's there, and he needs to be bounced off. But I think Richard Dreyfuss was just, because he comes in later in the
he's
movie.
He's very charming, you're 100% right.
I had one or two issues.
Yeah, go on.
When they were on the ship, and it's towards the very end of it, and the captain's already been chomped. Who, by the way, I fucking hate.
Well, we should mention the third member of the main cast is Robert Shaw playing Quint, who is a shark hunter, and he offers his services. He's highly expensive compared to what Alex's mum is offering to capture the shark. And they only take him up once he chomps down another dude. And then kills a fisherman, which we later find when they go.
I totally jumped.
Oh, from the head.
Yeah, when the head comes out of the hole. Oh, Jesus, that was good, man. It was actually one of two or three jumps. And I don't.
The legitimate jump scares in this movie. Which are earned.
Yes, earned completely. Because you don't want them stupid horror movies where it's like bang, 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 you know.
Oh, let's just make the music crescendo to make people jump.
Yeah, because it pisses me off. It pisses me off. Yep. No, this was good. Robert Shaw, of one of the captains named Quint.
Yep.
Quint, yeah. He, at a critical moment, smashes the radio.
Yes.
Is he just a fuckwit?
Yeah, because he's obsessed.
Idiot.
He's going to get this
he's
shark.
He's Ahab. Yeah. Is that his thing?
Pretty much.
I don't know, man. If someone had done that, I would have just thrown him overboard.
But we're showing how extreme he is, and that's how he gets to be where he is, and why he's got all the shark grills all over his cabin and
I get it.
And all the rest
of it. No, it still works and everything, but geez, that pissed me off. Yeah.
And there's a great moment in the, because the last hour of the film, 45 minutes of the film, is just the three of them on this boat.
Mm.
And it's those three versus the shark.
Yeah.
Which you think, but it works really well. It's quite, there's a nice little early interaction.
Yeah.
And then we get our iconic line of, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah. But yeah, as I was saying, with the thing that I had the sort of issue with was when, towards the end, where the shark has basically almost decimated the boat, and Roy Scheider is in the cabin, and the boat, and the shark comes through the window, and is essentially half out of the water. The whole time, Roy's got his sidearm. He should have just unloaded a clip into the shark's head. I know. I was like, dude, shoot. No, he's reaching around for a damn poker. But is absolutely.
I do feel a little bit like you're reaching, but yeah.
I'm not sure if
you've had a 26 foot shark or 24 foot shark coming at you and gone, oh yeah, that's right, my.
No, but I did once dance with a really fat girl. So, no, I'm kidding.
use your sidearm?
Let's say it was a sidearm. It's more of a front arm. No, I'm kidding. No, sorry, fuck it. Sorry. Yes. So, that was the only thing I could have, like, even a quote issue problem, you know, just,
it's a pretty perfect film. There's maybe a little bit of bloat in the middle bit before when everyone's hunting the shark and we're getting Hooper ingratiating himself with Brody and then Quint's introduction and the three of them going out. But once they sit down and they start comparing their scars.
Yes, Hooper, that was a great Quint, scene.
Great scene. Then we get the USS, I think he calls it Minneapolis, but it might be based on a different ship which went down and 1,000 men or whatever went in the water and 300 got pulled out because the rest got eaten by sharks or drowned.
Yeah.
Which they've long talked about as being another Jaws sequel potentially.
Oh, really?
And has never come about for, I imagine.
I don't know that
obvious reasons. I think it would be a great movie, but...
Maybe.
Anyway, and as you said, it's well documented that they didn't show the shark because they had problems with it, which works wonderfully in the film's favour.
Yeah, it does.
This film shaped creature feature monster films from then until now.
I remember you telling me that once. It was
that was the formula which they showed worked, and that still gets copied.
Yeah,
to a large extent today.
Yeah, it's like a freak. Imagine something going wrong, and then it becomes the good thing about your movie.
I guess that's the genius of Spielberg and the producers behind the film.
Good point.
Quint gets chomped on, which is pretty harrowing. Mm-hmm. Great. In the book, by the way, written by Peter Benchley, Hooper dies.
Really?
Yeah. So Hooper dies in the cage when he goes in. He does get chomped on the shark.
I'm so glad he didn't die.
Quint's right. He disappears in the film, and it's left to Brody to confront the shark. We get the... I always thought he said, "Smile, you son of a bitch."
Did he not say that?
No, he says, "Smile, you son of a..." Boom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so he was going to say bitch. He's just firing away.
It's funny what you hear. And, but there are no swears in this movie, so it's interesting that they stayed away from that.
Oh, good point. Yeah. No, is there no swears?
I don't think so. I don't think even Quint...
That old sea dog doesn't even...
Who, by the way, was pretty much drunk in every scene of that movie.
For real?
Yeah.
He looked fucked up.
Yeah, so he was...
But it worked.
At that Marlon Brando level of, fuck off, I don't care about any of you anymore. I'm just going to do what
God,
I want.
How do these people work? Oh, God.
Well, look, that's really all. It's obviously we both love the movie. Mm-hmm. I love it to the extent of giving it 4.5 stars.
What? Yeah.
It is the best film I can recall from that era of time.
Oh, yeah, I give it 4.
4 or 4.5. There you go. That's a glowing endorsement for our first Rewind Be Kind segment. And speaking of the name then, Wayne, it's over to you to pick for next time that we do this segment.
Okay, I got kind of a funny one here. No, it's not a funny one. It's definitely something that's very meaningful for you, to the two of us.
Okay.
Okay? It's the movie that essentially made us friends.
Oh!
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Tango!
Tango and Cash.
Yeah!
Because Tango and Cash is... I don't even know how people view this movie now, but I remember loving it, and I haven't seen it in a very long time.
It's always on TV, or it seems like it's always on TV.
Yes, so. It does, and I only see the bits that...
Yeah, you see snatches of it.
Yes, so I want an actual detailed sort of, like a...
Was it as good as we remember?
Was it as good as we remember? Look, okay. I'm guessing no, all right? But is there enough nostalgia to make you happy about it?
Okay, yeah,
to
make I'm up. Kind. That's a good one.
So,
all right.
Tango and Cash.
Very kind. Excellent. Well, before we go any further, let's throw to a break and listen to a couple of shows from the Podden Family Network, hashtag Podden Family on Twitter. A bunch of independent podcasts that have come together to help promote one another, and hear a couple of great shows from there.
News on the mark!
The year 2014. Two best friends set out on a journey to produce the best content related to all things film. In 2015, they founded a podcast to share their passions with the world. From rants, lisps, and beer, to trailers, challenges, and premieres, Nick and Justin have you covered. Find the Epic Film Guys podcast at epicfilmguys.podbean.com and follow the show on Twitter. And we'll see you at the movies.
All right, Kenny, we're going to record some Now That I'm Older promos.
No.
Dude, just tell everybody that Now That I'm Older is on every Thursday.
I'm not going to do that.
Dude, God damn it. Okay, Now That I'm Older is on every Thursday on the Rogue Incel Podcast Network.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Every Thursday.
No, it's not. It's on Tuesdays.
God damn it. Just listen to Now That I'm Older on Thursday.
On Tuesday.
It's Oscar season, and next week the Academy will be unveiling its awards, the biggest night in Hollywood. We thought we'd get in on the party by recording our thoughts on the worst decisions the Academy has made.
Worst decisions?
At least over the last 20, 30 years, which is probably about as long as Wayne and I have been genuinely interested in film for. You may have something older than that. I don't. My list is all within that sort of.
No, I wanted. Yeah, I had some.
Almost 35
there are, yeah, there are some big things, but I was honestly, I didn't care that much about them because, you know, I wasn't alive.
Yes.
So,
fair enough.
Yeah, so.
Well, I'm going to lead off today with what I think is the 10th worst decision the Academy has ever made. It is from 1981. It's a little bit of a geeky stretch,
mm-hmm.
but awarding Chariots of Fire the best film.
Oh, really? What's it up against?
In a year that included Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you think about these two films,
yep.
35 years later, this is the oldest film on my list, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Chariots of Fire, who the fuck remembers anything about this movie except the iconic
theme song? Yep. That's the first thing I learned to play on the piano. Because it's really, it's like, boom, 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 boom. So,
whereas Raiders of the Lost Ark,
yep.
I wouldn't say redefined, but it certainly set the tone for cinema through the 80s.
I would have to agree with that because like you said, everyone remembers that shit. Everyone knows scenes from it.
We'll have camps of, is Harrison Ford's best character Han Solo or is it Indiana Jones?
Mm.
Indiana Jones is that big, and what the fuck is Chariots of Fire?
Yeah, by the way, where do you come down on that?
Well, until Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I would have said.
I'm Indy as well. Jones. Even with that, yeah, I know. Look, they fucked it up there, but I still like Indy better than Han Solo.
So, yeah, that's my pick for number 10. Shame.
Not bad, not bad. Here's a very old one on my list as well. This would, I guess, have to be the oldest one, but I was alive when it. No, I wasn't. I was 1 year before I was alive.
Oh, nice. So you've gone even further back in time?
Well, this is the thing. When I was 15 years old, I remember hearing about a movie called All the President's Men.
Okay, yes.
And I remember thinking to myself, I've heard it just referenced so often, I'm just going to go hunt it down. Mm-hmm. Back then you had to find a fucking video from the video shop.
You had to hire it.
I had to hire it, I know. So I did do that, and I remember being very impressed that it was a drama, and it was all talky-talky, and I was a 15-year-old kid, man. I want to see shit blow up. So,
and now as a 40-year-old male,
yes, I want to see shit blow up exactly. So, but back then, this is the movie that made me think, oh, perhaps I'm smarter than I thought it was. Not that I am. If a movie like this made me interested, I was excited to watch. It was basically about journalism.
Okay,
and it's got Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, Woodward and Bernstein, and it's all about the Deep Throat conspiracy and all this shit about to do with Washington. And I was really impressed with it. Now, the year it was released was the same year that it got beat by Rocky. Now, I don't necessarily hate Rocky or anything, but I don't give a shit about Rocky.
Yeah, okay.
You know what? My favorite Rocky movie is fucking Rocky V.
Yeah.
That's right! I know, everyone freaks about that.
Pretty much ends Wayne's
expert
opinion on the Rocky series.
Actually, wait, the Drago one was good, too. So
that's way better than Rocky V.
I like that he never got in the ring. What? Anyway, so this is my number 10, because I think All the Presidents Are In should definitely have won over Rocky.
Fair enough.
So, one guy talking.
My number 9, I'm going to switch to the Best Actress category.
Mm.
And we're going back to 1987, where, for the film Moonstruck,
Cher
won Best Actress. Just, I'm going to let that hang out there for a little bit.
No,
Cher, obviously a very successful musical career.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think she was in after Moonstruck?
Now, this is an interesting thing you bring up, because last night it was. I was at a party, and a bunch of chicks were talking about Moonstruck, and how amazing Cher was in it, and what an amazing movie it was. Now, I haven't seen Moonstruck, okay?
I saw it back in the day.
Back in the day?
And
I mean, you would have hated it back in the day.
Loathed it.
You would have been pissed all over it. Yeah, no.
Loathed it. But I realize it's not made for me, and maybe that's the difference.
Total chick-flick.
Maybe women went, well, Cher's incredible. Whereas, to my mind, the best performance of that year, by a country mile, is Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
Redefining crazy.
Then she was up for...
Yeah, she was nominated. Got beaten by Cher. Do you reckon Glenn Close went home that night just fucking spewing?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. She showed her titties and everything. And then, like, you know.
Not that you get an Academy Award for doing that.
No, but, like, you're putting yourself out there a lot, and then all of a sudden fucking Cher wins.
She's giving for her art.
Absolutely. I would be very, like, you need to pay me a lot for them titties, man. So, if I was her. So, if I was me, fuck it.
Her performance was stellar.
It was.
She scared men probably from having infidelity liaisons.
Yeah.
Extramarital liaisons
yeah.
for many years to come after that.
Mucking around.
She is the equivalent of going for a shower from Psycho. Yet Cher won.
Yeah.
That's my number 9.
All right. No, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. My number 9 is actually the Best Supporting Actor Oscar, which in 1993. Now, do you remember Schindler's List?
Yes.
Of course you do. Because it's fucking awesome. And I remember
thinking... Awesomely horrible, but yes.
I mean, yeah, it's an amazing movie, though. So, the thing that I remembered about that show was actually Ralph Fiennes. He was not Liam Neeson. Ralph Fiennes, who I'd never heard of it before, was the menacing yet likable Nazi. somehow. He was, yeah. Likeable is a strong word.
Likeable is a very strong word.
But I don't know, somehow he was, I don't know, it made it easier for me to watch the movie. And it was black and white, and I was totally not into that, and whatever. And he was beaten out in 1993 by Tommy Lee Jones for fucking The Fugitive.
The Fugitive.
Let me think, is this ridiculous or not? Because I like Tommy Lee Jones's role, and I liked that movie. But it isn't any fucking Schindler's List. He was basically like a hardened marshal. And an Oscar? I don't think it's Oscar worthy.
Look, you're bringing up, probably jumping ahead of something I was going to say. Hmm. Not that this one's on my list, but the Academy seems to award, we've talked about it before, body of work
rather
than individual performance.
Which is so bad for people who killed in one particular movie and thought their turn to get recognised.
You go, all right, we've got Tommy Lee Jones giving his outhouse, hen house, whatever speech.
Yep.
But apart from that, do you remember anything about that movie?
Just the jump from the...
The jump. Which wasn't by him.
Right.
Not that you get a Best Academy supporting actor for jumping.
No, but it was a cool scene. Yeah, so yeah. And that's it. But you could almost pick any of Ralph Fiennes' performances or scenes in this one and go, that was great.
If I compare those two, which is a better performance? Well, from memory, Ralph Fiennes, for sure.
Yeah. So, right. You know, bit of a miss there.
My number eight is a film which I have not seen all of, but I've seen enough of to know this is reprehensible that it won Best Picture. It's Driving Miss Daisy from 1989.
Of course this is on your list.
And the problem with this film winning, it's pretty simple, okay? It won because it's this nice, slight, kind of not overly weighty comment on race relations.
Yep.
Which in 1989, big, big thing.
Completely fine.
Arguably still a big thing today, but back then with so much more weight and power.
Yep.
Yet, this is the same year that Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing came out.
All right, so...
Now, which one's better at doing that?
Now, I don't really like Spike Lee.
Look, he's not my favourite filmmaker either, but if I went... Which is a better, more effective, harder-hitting comment on or reflection of race relations?
Yeah.
Driving Miss Daisy or Do the Right Thing? I know where my vote would be.
Mate, you're not alone. Do you remember that year, or was it the year after? I can't remember. Kim Basinger is doing, like, she goes on this tirade on the podium at either one of the Academy Awards, either this year or the year after. No, I think it was this year, saying how, I can't believe Do the Right Thing wasn't nominated for na-na-na-na-na, and she's and everyone's like cheering and shit.
Yep. So wasn't even nominated, that's right. So this is really, so to speak, out of left field. But if you want to just get past that, was Driving Miss Daisy a better film than Dead Poets Society?
Well, I don't really remember Driving Miss Daisy, though I have seen it. No.
Again, which one's more memorable?
Exactly.
For the right reasons.
Dead Poets Society is fucking great, man.
Anyway, there you go, that's my number eight.
Okay, well my number eight is, do you remember the movie Munich?
Yes.
Now, Munich was a big surprise to me because I didn't... Of course, I went into it knowing nothing.
So, Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg and Eric Bana is the lead. And you got Daniel Craig in there, all sorts of shit. And it went from being a really awesome, quite hooking drama into a kind of cool spy film. And that's what got me. I was like, awesome. These well-renowned like movies can still be kind of an intrigue or a thriller or something. It doesn't have to be about some fucking gay cowboys or whatever, right?
Yes.
But that year it got beat out by Crash. So, Crash is a movie that I don't know whether I would have disdain, because I hate preachy-ass movies, like the ones that you dictate, this is how, it's really fucking insidious, this racism, or, I really didn't interest me at all, and Munich was a way better movie, in my opinion.
Yep.
So, that's my number eight.
No, I think it's a good pick. My number seven, now we're going back to an acting category, is right back to 1992, and it's Scent of a Woman, or at least Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman, winning Best Actor.
Yep.
No one is going to argue that pre-1992, Al Pacino was not one of the finest actors alive.
Yep.
Arguably one of the top two, with Bobby De Niro. And you could think of all these films from the late 70s and the 80s, and then later on, of course, Goodfellas as well. Oh, not later on. Just before this, Goodfellas. Although he wasn't the standout in that film compared to Joe Pesci and the like. But how he did not win a Best Actor for The Godfather.
Yeah.
Or The Godfather Part 2. Or Dog Day Afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Or Serpico.
Yep.
But one for playing a blind man who chews scenery through a light bit of fluffy romantic drama is an absolute travesty of justice.
Who did he beat out for this?
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
As Will Money in The Unforgiven?
Yeah.
Or how about Denzel in Malcolm X?
Now, look, I do agree with you, but I really like to see... I really like that thing. I know!
Wait a second.
I know.
Apparently you and the Academy agree on one thing.
Yes! Was funny. And he was like, look, I don't even know how I feel about this, but this one is not on my list, but I understand why you feel this way.
Worst thing is, and then it pays it forward, because Denzel then wins Best Actor for Training Day.
Yep. Which, I don't have a problem with it.
Training Day was fine as a movie, but he was not the best performance of that year. And I didn't include it here because I didn't want to rag on the same kind of thing. But it's clearly they're making up for not giving it to him for Malcolm X.
Yeah, and that is absolutely wrong. If it's, you know, if you win a race 3 days, you know, you don't get the award sort of four races hence.
I agree.
You know, 100%. So it's, yeah.
That's why it's on my list.
All right. No, that's a good pick. My number 7 is a little tough because I like the movie that did won, but I don't believe it should have won.
Okay.
Over the other one. In 1998, Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan. I'm sure this is on your list.
Okay. I need to gather myself. Please, you go first.
Look. Don't get me wrong. This is why it's on my list. Saving Private Ryan should have fucking won. All right? Shakespeare in Love, though, was just a delight. I had a really great time with it. I'm the only guy who likes Gwyneth. It's fine. The whole thing was... You know me, man.
And Chris Martin.
Not anymore, but yes. I had a better time with that. Saving Private Ryan is definitely the harder-hitting, more, you know, Hammer Time movie. But I think people were... Because, like, I think what happened that year is that, like you said, the Academy... I think Steven Spielberg won the Best Director that year.
He did.
And then they said, well, let's not give him both. They still want to acknowledge, you know, Shakespeare in Love, because it was a good movie. It maybe wasn't a better movie. And then they gave that the Best Picture nod. So, yeah, no. I mean, I still think it's a trav, whatever. I don't know, you know, I know your face is here. It's like, you're giving me shit, man.
No. You are what's wrong with this world.
Yeah, but... I am. Not the first time I've heard that.
Look, Nick from Epic Film Guys, yep. We haven't shouted him out yet today. If you listen to their show, whenever Nick gets really upset, he plays a music theme, which is Nick's rants. He suggested that maybe I should have my own rant theme for this podcast.
All right.
I haven't got there yet, but I'm considering it.
We'll probably get there.
And maybe this is going to push it over the edge. Because if there is any decision in movie history worse than this one...
I'm guessing I know where this hits your list. Go on.
I would like to give a heartfelt and very sincere fuck everybody who voted for Shakespeare in Love over Saving Private Ryan as a better film.
Okay. Like I said, it's on my list, so I'm going to agree
with
you.
If Academy Awards were awarded to films that are more delightful,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure an animated film would win every year.
Well,
so
yes.
I don't know who drank the fucking Kool-Aid that year, but or whoever led the smear campaign against Saving Private Ryan and Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks and everyone else.
Harvey Weinstein is the answer.
It's Harvey Weinstein.
He's known for seemingly having campaigns which seem to influence results that come out wild like this.
You know, if suddenly next week a campaign comes up that Deadpool is too violent and no one should watch this movie, you know what I'm going to do? Fuck those people.
Yeah.
No, not literally, but I'm going to say fuck those people. So if you're that shallow a person that someone sending you a bottle of Glenfiddich or whatever it might be is enough to sway your
I'm
vote,
sure
fuck you even more.
Yeah, no, but if you're on the bloody... I'm sure they police that. Or maybe they don't. I don't know. Maybe they didn't.
I think they police fucking anything for the Academy.
Right.
That's the problem.
Like, just email us your votes. Yeah, probably.
How can you have this arguably the best war film of all time and certainly one of the most powerful and impactful films up against a bit of light Shakespearean bollocky fluff? And yet that one wins.
Because it was fun. But yes, I know what you mean. And no, it's on my list, man. I agree with you.
If I may...
Saving Private Ryan should have won.
If I may borrow from one of my favourite comedies of all time, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Fuck the Academy from that year. Fuck them up. They're stupid asses.
Yeah.
I'm done.
No, I'm done with that.
Now I need to calm down before we get to my number 6.
Well, yeah, that's actually all I had to say about it. So, you know... How about it, my friend?
My number 6 is the best picture winner from 1985. It's Out of Africa.
Oh, really?
Like turgidly slow romantic drama with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford.
Yeah, I didn't mind it, but what did it beat?
Yet it beat Peter Weir's Witness.
Yeah, Witness was the shit. Yeah.
Peter Weir getting a lot of short thrift from the Academy here because he was also the director of Dead Poets Society, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they're throwing some shade there.
And I guess we hear about a lot of that because he's Australian.
He's Australian, director, yeah.
Anyway, terrible, terrible film, and I would like to understand what their rationale was. Probably the same rationale as my number 4, which is coming up very shortly, but I'll rag on that more then.
Okay, you know, it was a darling piece, the Out of Africa. It was like Robert Redford and this and that, and it was emotional. I know, Witness was cool. All right, my number 6 is actually a different one. It's the Best Original Song category.
Nice, okay. All
right. Okay, so in the 1985 Academy Awards, the following songs...
Oh, it's from Out of Africa, same year.
It was. Were nominees for Best Song, and the songs were... Now, look, it was 85.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So, put your head back there. Yeah. Okay, so, the songs were Footloose, awesome. the Ghostbusters theme song. Yeah, Ray Parker Jr.'s son. And
Kenny Loggins.
And I'm Alone Here, Against All Odds by Phil Collins. I Love Me Some Phil Collins. I don't give a fuck who knows it. All right. Purple Rain by Prince. And I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder.
So which one won?
Fucking I Just Called to Say I Love You won.
Oh.
For my money, Against All Odds should have won. Yeah, I'd say it. But any other one would have been fine.
Mm.
This one is still ridiculed in High Fidelity and shit like that.
Yes,
so it was it's a stupid
massively
song.
Called
I
out.
Just Called to Say I Love You, fuck off.
Yep.
All right, so that was my problem. So 1985, best original song, wrong one won.
Fair enough. My number five is we're finally marching into the current millennium with 2002's Best Picture winner, which I've not seen from start to finish in one sitting, I will admit. And that's because it's a musical. Ooh. And we all know how I feel about musicals. And how the fuck any musical could win an Academy Award as the Best Picture of that year.
Having said that, you did like the Buffy musical episode.
Yeah, because it was thematically...
We'll go to the
Chicago.
Yeah.
Directed by Frank Marshall. It's laughable this movie won Best Picture. It was released in the same year as... Alright, again, maybe a slightly geeky stretch, although eventually its sequel did win. The Fellowship of the Ring. Lord of the Rings. Surely a better film, and again, more impactful on cinema than Chicago and Catherine Zeta-Jones swanning about. But more importantly than that, Roman Polanski, The Pianist, which I've talked up on this show before.
Yes, you have.
Is an amazing piece of Holocaust-based cinema.
Yes.
In the terms of World War II and what happened to the Jews and the Poles and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
He did win Best Director, though, so I guess the Academy threw him bone, much like Steven Spielberg with Saving Private Ryan. Nevertheless, how that beat this, I do not know.
This is totally on my list, this one. But I will tell you that...
Cross-up, really?
Yeah, this is the first kind of cross-up we've had. Oh, well. But the thing is that what really gets me about this one is that what wasn't even nominated for Best Picture this year.
Okay.
And that was... Road to Perdition.
Oh, yeah, good flick.
Road to Perdition should have won, man, everything. It was the best shit ever. But no, this thing here.
That seems to have its fair share of detractors, that movie, which is not you and I. We love that movie.
No, who
I bet lots of people saying, oh, it's boring and nothing really happens and whatever.
Man, that shit was right cutting you in the heart and shit.
I agree.
Man, who knows?
I would love for that to win even more than Fellowship of the Ring. Okay, but
yeah, totally, yeah. Totally. Okay, well, so my number five is a funny one. Because you know I love Dances with Wolves and you hate it.
Once again, stealing from my list.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, okay. Well, yes. Basically, Dances with Wolves won over Goodfellas. And that's just silly. Okay, don't do that. Goodfellas is Goodfellas. And who knows? Like, you know, I mean, did they know then it was going to be such a timeless piece that everyone loved forever? Probably not. But even so, side by side, you're watching both movies at the same time, Goodfellas has got to win, man.
For sure.
Got to win.
This bloated vanity piece that was Dances with Wolves versus...
Which was fine, but it wasn't any Goodfellas.
Seminal crime saga classic with some of the most amazing technical shots in cinema history up until that point.
Yep. The fucking... Oh, everyone knows about the fucking kitchen and the fucking nightclub.
Yep.
So, you know... I mean, look, like I said, Dances with Wolves, I can see why it won because it was... Heartstringy. I know you can't. There's no point in having this argument again.
No, it's not. So well, I wonder. This is one that I honestly think that the Academy would acknowledge. We just screwed up. And sorry.
Really?
I reckon there's a few members of the Academy who've lost night's sleep over this. Or I hope there are.
I think they're fine. They're just counting money and shit. So yeah. Okay. That's my number five.
Ah, gee, that low. So you've got some pretty high ones on my list that you've
I'm more incensed by.
Right. Well, this should be very interesting to hear what your most insensible ones are.
Mm-hmm.
My number four is a film that I loathe with a carefree abandon, and it was a film I've mentioned before on the podcast that I tried to go to the cinema to watch purely because it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Anthony Minghella, is that how you say his name?
Oh.
The English Patient from 1996.
This is on my list too.
This is the definition of boredom, this film.
Do you know what? I've never seen it all the way through it. So.
Oh, well done, because you're a smarter person than I am.
Look, it was. I wanted to go see it. The buzz was huge. Do you know what was nominated there?
Fargo. Look, I'm not a huge Fargo fan, but it was a million times better than this film.
This is on my list. It's higher on this list, but you know what? Fargo isn't the one that I wanted to win.
Hmm?
It was, big surprise, Jerry Maguire.
Oh, yeah. And I wrote that here as well. Even fucking Jerry Maguire could win. And I'd be happier than this.
Fucking masterpiece, man. So.
Yeah, of course, that would be your...
But yeah, The English Patient, no.
Be very high.
It's not better than either of those movies, so fair enough. Although I must say, Fargo, when I first saw it with you, yeah. I was still under the Cohen curse. Well renowned. Did not like yes. it, and no, it's good. So,
which
yeah.
makes your interest in Hail Caesar all the more
big time.
Intriguing.
Big time.
All right.
Okay, my number four was The Road to Perdition not winning over fucking Chicago.
Okay.
So, straight back to you.
All right, well, my dislike for this film is renowned between you and I.
You are
an verdant defender.
Oh, okay.
Thereof it. It's Forrest Gump.
Directed Forrest by Gump Robert is Zemeckis great.
In 1994. Now, I chose to illustrate our Twitter post about today's topic with a picture of Forrest Gump sitting on his bench and had two or three people jump on and go, I actually like Forrest Gump. Don't know why you chose that picture.
Yes, because so, fucking who knows what you're thinking.
I think this is a polarizing film. It wasn't at the time. At the time, most people loved it.
I remember exactly what happened when we saw it.
And then over time, it's gotten more and more flack. So now I'm in a growing camp of people who are like, fuck how this movie won.
Okay, I remember, by the way, everyone, when we went and saw this movie, I remember this day, man. We were out with a bunch of folks, right? And we were kids or whatever. We saw the movie in the cinema. At the end of the movie, the whole row of us, save for you, we're like, wow, that was awesome. And you're like, shh, what the fuck, this, that, whatever, right? And everyone's like calling you drinking Haterade and shit like that. And we were like,
because Haterade wasn't out.
Whatever. And I remember one of Neil, I think, said, you know, at the beginning of the movie, this feather floats down from the sky, and then that starts the scene. Neil said, oh, I guess if the feather float down and kill someone by cutting their throat, then Paul would like it. So even back then, people, he was a sadist. So
look. Let's talk about the other films that were out that year.
All right, let's hear it.
The Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, I know.
That's a pretty good argument there. It's number one on the... Not that IMDb should define the Academy, but it is number one on the most popular film of all time on IMDb.com. Yeah. Frank Darabont's masterpiece. But even bigger than that, and what should have won, a film that I think has helped define cinema for the last 22 years.
Mm.
It's Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Is anybody able to sit there and argue why Forrest Gump is a better film than Pulp Fiction?
I'll give it a try.
I have a bottle in my hand.
I understand. Look, no one doesn't love Pulp Fiction either. But that was a movie where I had to learn to get through the scene as opposed to Forrest Gump, which was just in-my-face entertaining. This is where Tarantino had his long fucking scenes and this and that. And if you weren't already enamored with fucking Quentin Tarantino, you would have to learn.
I had one film before this. Which is why I didn't win, by the way.
And it was,
had this film, I reckon, come out as his seventh or eighth film, the Academy would have said, here you go.
Yes, I agree. So there's definitely like context there. It's like, yeah. But I think that's what it was. Forrest Gump was more cinematic. Pulp Fiction was more like raw.
Forrest Gump was more full of special effects and a massive budget.
Hey, Robert Zemeckis' special effects, which are all subtle, like the guy has no legs and shit like that, not really big things. That shit's good, man. It didn't not deserve an Academy, but perhaps Shawshank, for me, should have won. I know for you it's
fiction a million times over. All right, that's my number three.
Okay, my number three is... this is against a movie that was just unnominated for Best Picture.
Okay, so one that wasn't even picked up.
Okay, now, in 2008, Slumdog Millionaire won.
Danny Boyle.
Right, and you know what didn't even get nommed? Fucking The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. The Dark Knight, well held by many people to be the best movie ever made. Yeah.
You know what, if Dark Knight was made today,
yeah,
it would have been nominated.
Yes.
I think The Dark Knight redefined. I think it's
because
lack
it was
of nomination.
A comic book movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
But now we get things like Mad Max, Fury Road, which are nominated, and The Martian,
yes. Which I like
extent.
Much better.
Yeah, I know you like Dark Knight much better than Mad Max.
No, but I mean, like, even like the idea that a movie like Fury Road could get to things, I like that.
And I think maybe this might have been, look, I could be wrong here, and please write in, let us know, Twitter, Gmail, all the rest of it. It might have been this was the year that they increased it, or started to think at least about increasing it from 5 Best Picture nominations to up to 10. So I think we have 8 this year.
Yeah, no.
Now a lot more films get nominated, even if they're not going to win it. So they're acknowledging that, hey, in this crowded year of film releases, there are now 10 best films, not just 5.
Mm.
And maybe Dark Knight was a victim of that parity.
I think so. It's always political.
Not that I'm saying I agree with you. I like Dark Knight a million times more than Slumdog Millionaire. I can see why it won.
Yep,
but
it's heartstringy.
Yeah, but whereas, would it stand the test of time? Would anyone now say it should have won? Probably not.
Yeah, I hope so.
Hmm. My number two, we've mentioned Dances with Wolves. Scorsese and Goodfellas. Oh, unbelievable.
Yep, no problem. Well, my number two has also been mentioned before, The English Patient over, for me, Jerry Maguire.
Yep, all right.
So we're back to number one.
We are, and anticlimactically, it's been mentioned, of course, it is Shakespeare in Love beating out Saving Private Ryan.
That's your number one?
I think I've gotten upset enough about it for one day.
Okay.
Right back to you for your number one.
All right, now, no points for originality here with this one, because this is my number one is actually often touted as the world's biggest mistake. Everyone still mentions it now. And I'll tell you why I think it is. It's where Marissa Tomei won Best Supporting Actress from My Cousin Vinny. Now, here's the thing. I usually, certainly back then, this is 1992, I would hear that a movie was nominated and then go see it. This is one of the few times I had seen this movie.
Yep.
And then it got nominated, and I'm like, what?
What? Huh?
Because this movie fucking sucks. It sucks. It sucks, all right? And more importantly than that, even if you didn't like the movie, her role was the chick comedy relief, not even kind of that... This
not even that funny comedy
tiny,
relief.
Yeah, huh? not even comedy, because it was a funny movie, but she was just this... And her whole scenes were basically a bit of interaction with Joe Pesci, and then she's in the courtroom, and she's... And it was shit. It was shit. It was like real fucking noon snooze, right? So... When it got nominated, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And then when she won, you know, there's like this...
she fucking won.
She fucking won. And then there's all these rumors that Jack Palance, like, read the wrong name and shit like that. And it's... And to be
surely not.
Yeah, no, it is. There's heaps of rumors about that, right? It's right. Like it's an urban legend, yeah. Now, look, since then, she's been nommed again in, like, The Wrestler and shit like that. So,
yep, true.
And I don't actually think she's a bad actress at all. I just think this role, how did it even get past anyone? It's like, I don't know, like a bit part from the night before, Anthony Mackie's role was
what?
Up top. Yeah, something like, that's what I think
I
it is.
I don't remember My Cousin Vinny, and I hadn't really, if I have seen the whole thing, I certainly have blocked it out. So, if Anthony Mackie was nominated for anything other than
that's what I think this is like.
Being a comedy ever again, I'd be upset.
Yeah, that's what this is like. It was such an inconsequential role. It shouldn't even have turned up.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, then what was on instead?
Well, the four other nominees, I haven't seen their performances or these movies, but I know that they would have been better than this. Okay, I'm telling you.
Right.
Check it out. It was Judy Davis in Husbands and Wives, Vanessa Redgrave in Howard's Butt, Miranda Richardson in Damage, and Joan Plowright in Enchanted April. Okay. I haven't seen any of them movies, but it all got to be better than this, that role anyway.
Maybe that's why she won, because hers was the only role that anybody saw.
She was doing someone in the Academy, I think.
Alright, good. Well, there is our top 10 worst Oscar decisions of all time.
Damn now, straight. Now,
we have a few bits and pieces, or a couple of people who got back to us on Twitter to let us know what they thought. Matt S, @likely_lad, who is a long time listener of the show, just jumped straight on the Crash bandwagon. He said, I just can't stand this movie. And then he elaborated a little bit more after saying that, when he admitted that when he saw his TV and that it won against Brokeback Mountain, he screamed, NINE! Because he is German.
Got it now.
And our good friend So Wizard Podcast, @SoWizardPodcast, Joey from the show wrote, Forrest Gump, Crash, Shakespeare in Love, all straight garbage. So he's hit on all about both of our lists there very nicely and summarised it perfectly well. When I put this post out on Twitter, I used an image from Forrest Gump. A couple of people took a little bit of umbrage at my choice of picture to illustrate the worst decision in Oscar history.
I can imagine, man.
Including Kevin Bichaz, @cinematic_rand, who said, this is a film that changed his life.
Yeah.
And he would prefer not that to be included there. Absolutely fine. Thank you for getting back, Kevin.
And I'm down with you, man.
And What the Fork Show, @MyWTFShow, said, yeah, Tom Hanks, I'm biased because I work with him, he said, and
wow.
He is as amazing and humble as he is talented. So
yeah, because everyone loves Hanks.
Then the poop culture weighed in with, I'm not sure if they were being deadly serious, they agreed with a gif of Tom Hanks from Bosom Buddies dancing around with a towel around his waist and saying, agreed, he has a huge range.
I remember Bosom Buddies.
That's really it as far as Twitter responses have gone to the question about what was the worst Oscar film winners in history. But I do want to do a little bit of a shout out to the Faces and Aces LV podcast, who are another member of Pod and Family, who in an exchange during the week were in Las Vegas and asked for a nomination on the roulette table. I wrote back and said, well, number 10, Black, because Wesley Snipe said,
always
bet on Black. Sadly, it came up Red 21, so no one was a winner. Just all I guess I want to say to that is, I'm sorry, Faces and Aces, thanks for trying. And I did say they'd split it 50-50 with us. But you just can't believe everything movies tell you. Newsflash.
Especially Wesley Snipes. If you're the IRS.
Well, with that, it's time for a quick break, and we'll be back with the last part of today's show.
Hey, welcome to the Classy Little Podcast promo.
We're your hosts. I'm Emily.
And I'm James.
What wine are we drinking this week?
It's just a promo, so I thought we didn't have to drink a bottle of wine.
Well, let's open a bottle just in case.
Okay. Did you bring a cheese to accompany it, too?
What cheese pairs well with a promo? Promolone? Promazon? Pro-mozzarella?
Oh, goodness. Well, As you might have guessed, every week we have wine and cheese on our show.
And we pick a different topic for each episode. We find out interesting and quirky aspects of it, including the history, the etiquette,
the controversies and injustices surrounding them.
Okay, we know, James. Everything is terrible. How would you describe it?
It's fun and informative, but not too informative or didactic.
Yeah, but we don't use words like didactic.
No, never. Anyway, you could find us at classylittlepodcast.com.
Or on your podcatcher of choice every Wine Wednesday.
Cheers!
Cheers!
Our final segment of today, as part of our Oscars special, is looking at this year's Oscars ceremony for the 2015 films that were released, and looking at the seven main categories and deciding on what we want to win, and then what will win, or what we think will win.
Mm.
And to make it interesting, Wayne, what have we decided to do?
We are going to lay a bet on this. Whoever of us gets the most right, as in our predictions of which who person will win or whatever,
yep,
they get a wild card. They get to pick the movie that, what, we
review for a week.
Review for a week. No matter what movie it is, even if it's like a piece of shit fucking horror movie that Paul likes, I gotta watch that bag of ass. Or,
like, for example, maybe I could pick next week if I, well, not next week, the week after if I win, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, for fuck's sake, that's gonna suck dick. So, alright.
And if Wayne wins, I'm sure he'll pick some piece of shit biography about some musician or Llewyn Davis playing motherfucker, I don't know.
So
that's what's at stake, and
that's right,
we will,
that's right,
of course, revisit after the Oscars have been announced in, I think, a couple of weeks' time when we record and let everyone know who won and what that means for the other.
Can't wait.
Okay, well, right. Why don't we lead off then with the best supporting actor roles? We've got seven categories we've picked. We haven't gone all the technical ones. We've just stuck to just best cinematography for the one technical award, but let's go with best supporting actor and actress first.
Okay, so the nominees for this best supporting actor role are Christian Bale in The Big Short, Tom Hardy in The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo in Spotlight, Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies, and Sly Stallone in Creed.
Mm-hmm. Who do you reckon is going to win?
The person I...
Oh, sorry, who do you want to win?
Who do I want to win?
Yeah.
I just saw Creed recently.
Yeah.
Okay, and I loved Sly's performance.
Yeah, it's great.
He was fucking awesome.
He was excellent.
Absolutely perfect. Note, I want him to win.
And who do you think is going to win?
I think Christian Bale's going to win.
For Big Short. Okay.
Yes. Right. I don't know why he's like, I don't know, he's not going to get a lot of other shit this year, so I reckon the Academy might just recognize him.
All right, well, I reckon, based on what you've just said, interesting, very interesting. Well, who do I want to win? Tom Hardy in The Revenant, who I thought was amazing.
Yep, no doubt.
And who I think will win, although this is a very close second for me, it is Creed. Well, sorry, Sylvester Stallone for Creed.
Yeah, no.
So
this
he's my pick for who he's going to win.
So I hope so.
Good, so we've already got a separation there. Actress
in a supporting role. This year we've got Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara in Carol, Rachel McAdams in Spotlight, Alicia Vikander in The Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs.
All right.
Okay, I think that Rooney Mara is going to win.
Okay.
For Carol.
Yep. And who do you want to win?
I want Jennifer Jason Leigh to win.
All right. Yep. I'm right there with you. I want Jennifer Jason Leigh to win as well, primarily because it's the only one of those films
I've seen. No, I've seen other ones on there, but like I think that because of all the lesbianism, Rooney Mara will win. But... Because, you know, the Academy loves a Liz. And well, so do I. So, but Jennifer Jason Leigh...
Yet another thing you and the Academy have in common.
But JJL, you know, I just wanted to win because it was a good-ass performance and I liked the movie. So.
Okay. All right, well, I've gone with Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl to win.
Of course, it's cross-dressing. And that trumps lesbianism.
Purely because the markets reckon she's going to win. So, all right, we've got two nominations.
Well, that's fine.
Different
that's fine.
Each. All right. Shall we move on to a technical category? Best cinematography.
Yep, totally. This year the nominees are Carol, The Hateful Eight, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, and Sicario.
All right, well, why don't I go first this time? Because it's pretty simple for me. Who do I want to win? Emmanuel Lubezki for The Revenant. And who do I think will win? Emmanuel Lubezki for The Revenant.
Yep. I also think The Revenant is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I want Mad Max Fury Road to win as well.
Okay.
So, I know.
Nice, you picked Mad Max Fury Road when I didn't.
Holy shit, I know, it's huge.
All right, well, how about then Best Director?
Okay, Best Director, the nominees, the movies are The Big Short, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight.
That's a good selection of films, I have to say.
Now, this is going to get you because I think The Revenant's going to win.
So, Alejandro Iñárritu?
Yes, because he's still a darling.
Yeah. And he has advertised till the cows come home how arduous this shoot was and how horrible it was for everyone. And please, 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 please reward me.
They will reward him, I think. That's what I think. But I actually want Mad Max Fury Road to win.
We are exactly on the same page then with that one, because that's exactly... I want George Miller to win. I think he's been such an amazing director through the course of his career. It would be lovely to reward... as much as I said, we shouldn't do this, the body of work, but no, I love Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm. No, it's fucking awesome.
Inarritu won last year for Birdman, but I think Revenant's a much better film, so I agree with you. I think it will win.
Yeah, there you go. Plus, he's already won one last year, so are they going to
do that? That might actually rule against him. That might be the one thing that knocks him out of the equation, but let's see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're on the same page there. All right, so best lead actor.
Okay, the nominees are Bryan Cranston in Trumbo, Matt Damon in The Martian, Leo DiCaprio in The Revenant, Michael Fassbender in Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl.
Mm, simple, very simple for me. I want Leo to win both.
So do I.
I want him to win, and I think he will win. It's time. People have said, oh, it's not that as good as he was in Wolf of Wall Street, or this or that, the other.
This is a harder shoot.
This is an amazing physical performance, and we talked a lot about it a few weeks ago with the Epic Film guys when they guested on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and listen to that if you want to hear us, just or me in particular, rave about a performance.
Yep.
There's not that I've seen. Look, Matt Damon, The Martian's nice. He was nominated, but I don't think he deserves a win for that.
Plus, it's a comedy, so, yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You've seen Steve Jobs?
I have seen Steve Jobs.
How was Fassbender in that?
Really awesome.
So, because I believe he's the one that's most likely to steal it from DiCaprio.
Really?
That's my feeling.
This is all about who's... He was excellent and deserves it, I guess. But his shoot was Aaron Sorkin, man. He was just talking.
Yep.
It was pure performance.
Yep.
Whereas the other one seemed to be a labor of love.
Yeah, and like the emoting.
Yeah, and it's like such a physical film. Yeah. And you need to travel somewhere, you know, that sort of thing. So, depends where they go. But like you said, I still think The Revenant, and I want The Revenant.
Okay, and I haven't seen The Danish Girl, and I haven't seen Trumbo, so I can't really weigh in on those. Best lead actress?
Okay, the nominees are Kate Blanchett in Carol, Brie Larson in Room, Jennifer Lawrence in Joy, Charlotte Rampling, 45 Years, and Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn.
Hmm, okay, well said.
Okay, now here's the thing. I ain't seen any of these motherfucking movies. This is a shot in the dark for me.
Fair enough.
I think Brie Larson is going to win for Room.
Yep, I agree with you.
Because I know it's a tough movie and it would have taken a lot out of her. And the Academy will like that. But I kind of dig Jennifer Lawrence, so I'm going to go with Joy. I want her to win.
All right. Well, I want Brie Larson to win because that's the only film. I haven't quite seen all of Room, I have to be honest. I got through about 2/3 of it, but ran out of time whilst being up very late last night watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen 2/3. Her performance is amazing. I haven't seen any of the other performances here because none of those films really appeal to me. So I want her to win, and I think she will win on that basis alone.
Cool. Okay, now we're moving on to the big one.
Last one. Best picture. Last category.
The nominees here are The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. I've seen quite a few of these, actually.
I've seen them most. I haven't seen The Big Short, I haven't seen Brooklyn, and as I just mentioned, I've seen most of Room. Seen the rest. What have you seen?
I've seen The Big Short, I saw Bridge of Spies, I saw Mad Max, The Martian, The Revenant, and I really wanted to get the Spotlight, but ran out of time
as well. Okay, all right. So, what do you want to win, first of all? What's the one that speaks to you?
Yeah, I want the Big Short to win.
Okay.
This movie was fucking great. And just for what it was trying to do and what it managed to do, that is the bomb. And you know what? I think it will win.
Ooh.
I know.
Wow, you're going right out there.
I think...
Want to win and will win.
Because I think the Academy's going to do their thing where they give Alejandro his best directing Oscar.
Yep.
They'll want someone else to win here.
Okay.
So...
I kind of had a similar rationale with when I chose. Mm-hmm. There are some great movies here. I have to say, this is probably the best year I can recall.
Yep.
Look, Brooklyn has no interest for me whatsoever.
Yep.
Big Short definitely does. And I made a tactical error last night.
What?
Last night I had the option of going to see The Big Short in a little art house cinema.
Yep.
Or going to catch a film where we're slated to release next weekend, Zoolander 2. Now, I was taking girlfriend into account and her tastes, and we were on a little bit of a time clock with child and the like.
Uh-huh.
Nevertheless, I did not make the right call.
That's it. We will talk about this properly next week.
Yeah,
but,
yep. I should probably say, look, you know, if you don't want to do Zoolander 2 next week, that's okay.
This bad. Okay. Yeah. Ooh, okay.
Well, no. Save that. Spoilers for next week's episode. So I didn't get to see Big Short. It's a shame. But what I want to win is definitely Mad Max Fury Road. It's never going to win. It's 1,000-1 odds, I would suggest, as a chance. But wouldn't it be wonderful if that was Best Picture? No, I'm going with... Now, The Revenant's the short odds favourite.
Totally.
But I'm not going with that for the same rationale you've just made. Mm-hmm. I think he wins Best Director. I think it wins Best Cinematography. And I think they award something else.
Yes.
I'm going with Spotlight. which is a great movie.
Really?
That's my pick for what will win.
Damn it, I got to get to that. What was so good about it?
We've both picked a film the other one hasn't seen.
Yeah.
So, isn't it? That's fun.
No, I would love for you, I suppose we've seen those movies, it would fill out the list and stuff. Wait, just out of interest?
Yeah.
What do you think the Academy's going to go with Spotlight?
It's a film about a bunch of investigative journalists uncovering a bunch of priests who were sexually abusing children and the church covering it up in Boston.
Is much more should politically...
Should be boring as fuck.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's riveting.
Is it?
I put this on intending to watch it for half an hour and then get heavy-handed with the fast-forward button before I could fuck off and do something else.
Yep.
Watch didn't the do whole it.
Thing. That's a sign of a very good movie. You know.
Yeah, look, it is. It, like I said, you can't go in expecting an action extravaganza.
Nope, of course
not. You go in expecting a talky, engaging film where it's like, man, I want this to work out.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm going to see that shit.
All right, that's our Oscar predictions. We'll see who comes up trumps. We've got, I think, five different, maybe four different. That's enough. We should have a clear winner based on the Oscars ceremony in about 8 days' time. Looking forward to that one. And we will, of course, report back on the show.
By the way, Paul always wins this shit.
What? I've never done it before.
No, but like stuff like this where you're going to be this. Well, your logic always prevails. My stupid heart never does.
If my logic always prevailed, Shakespeare in Love would not have won dick.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that is it for episode 47. What are we doing for episodes 48 and then 49, Wayne?
48 next week is going to be the Zoolander 2 review. So we're already getting a little bit of an insight as
Zoolander
to what Paul thought about
poo.
It. I don't know. I don't want to walk into this one with a preconception.
Yeah, right,
so we'll just,
shut
I'm just going to
just
be,
watch
just
the
a,
film.
You
yep,
know,
yep,
all right?
Fair.
And then along with that, we're going to do the top 10 actor-director films with my significant other, Bridget, who has become popular with some of the listeners. Many of the listeners. All of the listeners. So
listeners.
Yes. With listeners. So,
that's a countdown of the films that actors who are in the movie have directed.
Right. Just like Zoolander 2.
Exactly. Which is where we get the linkage between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure it won't be on any of our lists. And then,
see, what are we doing after that?
And then for episode 49, we are going to review the new film, Triple Nine, directed by John Hillcoate.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, we're going to spin off and do a top 10 crime thrillers countdown. So a pretty generic genre there that should yield a lot of
looking forward
films.
To that one.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one.
All right. And then look, beyond that, we also have a couple of crossovers coming up in the near future with the Something Pod, our friends in the UK. We're going to be appearing on their show in the middle of next month.
Looking forward to that.
And then we have another huge crossover with the Epic Film Guys.
We're
going to appear on Nick and Justin's show, and we're going to be talking Superman Returns and the Nolan Batman films, which Wayne is very upset about having to do.
Oh, there's been a lot of underwear changes. I'm very, very, very looking forward to that.
So we've just started rewatching the films. We're going to be reviewing all four of them in detail with those awesome gentlemen.
Done and done.
All right, how to get in contact with us if you want to be a part of the show.
Email us at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com or search for us on Facebook. We're just The Countdown Podcast. You're going to find us there.
Right. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at CountdownPC. We're very active and now have well over 2,000 followers on Please to Report. And you can also catch us on Podomatic. Follow us there. You can like us there. Or, of course, on iTunes. Leave a rating and a review if you would be so kind. Helps us rise up the rankings, helps us get found, helps the show grow. And that's it for today. It's been, as always, an absolute pleasure. Wayne, thanks for having me along.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me too.
And our girlfriends are laughing at that bit.
No, yeah.
Until next week, my name is Paul.
My name is Wayne. Talking to you soon.
Cheers. We also have a couple of crossovers coming up in the near future with the Something Pod, our friends in the UK. We're going to be appearing on their show middle of next month.
Mm-hmm. You should leave that in, man.
No, surely we can.